painting to photography, from beadwork to woodwork. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
On this edition of Artbeat, we sit down with founder and associate producing director of the Great River Shakespeare Festival and this year's director of A Midsummer Night's Dream, Alec Wild. Today we will get to learn more about Alec as we delve into the world of directing for stage. Alec will share with us lessons he has learned in his profession, his creative process, the relationship between actors and directors, and just how interesting a first technical run of a production can be. You're listening to Artbeat with Terry Tenseth. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Terry. Glad to be here.
Now, what got you involved with the Great River Shakespeare Festival?
I was one of the founders of the Great River Shakespeare Festival. I had met the other two founders in Minneapolis when we were doing shows up there. We started talking about what would a Shakespeare Festival look like in Minnesota. Word got out, I guess, that we were talking about it, and some people from Winona called us and said, hey, you should start a Shakespeare company here in Winona. We were like, where's Winona? We had not heard of Winona before, but we should have. And we came down and visited, and that's how things got started. It was truly, truly remarkable and a great thing that happened.
So let's talk about you. Do you act as well?
I don't. I have, but only as a very young man. I always knew I wanted to direct, and I went to acting school, you know, sort of to try and prepare myself for directing. And then I stopped and just went on directing, which is what I wanted to do anyway.
How did you accomplish that path? How did you get there?
I started a theater when I was very young, around 20 years old, in Chicago, and I ran that for about 5 or 6 years. And then I applied to graduate school. I went to graduate school for directing, and then when I got out, I started freelancing and became a sort of full-time director.
Now, where did you go to school? Did you go to school in Chicago for that when you were
running? I went to undergrad in Chicago to the Goodman School of Drama, and then I went to the Yale School of Drama for my directing degree.
Tell me what it's like for you. What's your process like if you're given a play? And are you normally, do you work with Shakespeare normally, or is it kind of all over?
I do all kinds of plays. Shakespeare's been my bread and butter, actually, just because I think I had an affinity for it and loved it. You know, I love language, and I love rhetoric, and I love, you know, the way that words work together in interesting ways. I love hip hop. I love, you know, poetry. And so I got involved in Shakespeare early on and got hired to do a lot of those jobs. But I do a lot of other sorts of work too.
How do you approach something? How do you start mapping out how you want things to go for you and picking out people for your casting?
That's a great question. Some people say casting is 90% of the job. And that's honestly true, that in some way, like, who you cast says so much about what's going to happen with that particular role in a production, and how those people work together, of course, is going to be very important to the production. At different places, it works different ways. Here at Great River, we have a company that we've sort of put together over the course of the last 8 years. And they come from New York and LA and Chicago and Milwaukee and, you know, all sorts of places. We've sort of worked with them with the same core group of people for a number of years. And in other theaters, normally that wouldn't happen. You'd sort of cast each project kind of separately. And that's a very interesting process, actually, to go through casting. And you learn a lot when you're auditioning people about, oh, maybe that sort of actor could play this role. You know, I never thought of that before, but look at that. And it's a very creative process of putting the actors together with what's on the page.
Well, you have to be very careful with your decision-making process, because that can turn around the play.
Yeah,
like
it
that.
Can. And every director has horror stories of, oh my gosh, I cast this one guy once in this role, and he auditioned really well, but he turned out to be terrible, or he turned out to be really mean, you know. And so that can happen too.
Do you have to fire those people and then start over?
You know, sometimes you do, but hopefully not too often. I mean, if we just hired an actor who's not very good, generally we try not to fire those people, because that's the director's fault. If we, you know, if we hire somebody who's really awful and, you know, not being a good guy and, you know, showing up late to rehearsal and that kind of thing, then yeah, sometimes you have to let go. But I think I've been directing for 20 years, and I've only fired two people.
Okay.
In 20 years of directing. So
you're lucky.
Yeah, I guess I am. Yeah. Yeah.
When you have that relationship with the actors on the stage, I'm guessing there's some give and take, because they may have an idea and you have an idea. How does that come together and meld?
That's the question of questions, I think. And I think that depends on your directing style a little bit. My directing style is a little more exploratory than some. And so I like to argue and with the actors. So when an actor has an idea and I have a different idea, I like it when those ideas kind of clash. And usually, not always, but usually the clashing of ideas produces a third idea or something that's even better, you know, than what we could have thought of on our own. I trust actors a lot. They tend to know, have a good sense of what to do on the stage. And so I like to listen to them. I like to work with them to figure out what's going on in a certain moment of a play, rather than just tell them, you know, go here, stand here, say it like this. For us, it's really kind of like a treasure hunt, you know, as you go through the play and figure out where the gems are and where the potholes are. And it's great fun.
Now, a lot of people, when they do filmmaking or TV or what have you, they use a storyboard. Do you do something similar to that at all?
I actually do, or I've started to, just in the last few years. I've started to sort of draw moments of the play for myself. I'm a terrible artist.
Do you do the stick figures?
I do stick figures. I cannot draw to save my life. Sometimes as I'm reading a play, I'll see moments of that play. And as I'm reading it, I'll just scribble it down, you know, and write what the moment is. And so that sort of helps me remember, oh, at this point, this is what I was thinking it might look like. And maybe, you know, like three of those panels wind up in the, you know, in the final production. But it helps me sort of organize what I think is going on in the play.
Now, once costuming gets involved, set design gets involved, lighting gets involved, have you had to make a lot of changes?
Well, yes, certainly. I mean, in Midsummer Night's Dream, for instance, our set consists of a 14-foot, what we call it, a birdcage, and it's kind of a structure that sort of goes over the whole set. And the idea was for the actors to be climbing it all the time and, you know, working on it the whole time, which they do. But when they got their costumes on, their costumes they're fascinating. The costume designer had this idea that they were, when they weren't fairies, or that is to say when the fairies were asleep or hiding, that they looked like flowers in the forest. They looked like fauna. And it's a beautiful idea. But of course, when you put a bunch of flowers with big long stems on the back, 20 flowers on the backs of these actors who are climbing this 14-foot structure, things start to change.
Right.
You realize, wait a minute, I can't actually do that or go through that little hole. So that's what we call our tech process, where all of the ideas, the stuff that the actors and I are working on in the room, in the rehearsal room, and then the costume designer, the lighting designer, the set designer, the props designer, all those things come together for the last, you know, in our case at Great River, only 3 days. And we sort of figure out, hey, what works, what doesn't work, how do we put all this together. It's the most exciting and terrifying time, I think, during a show.
I would think you'd either be really elated or tearing your hair out.
Yeah. I think it goes back and forth. I think on the first day when we saw everything, we were elated, and then when we started to try and do the play, we were terrified, you know. I remember seeing the first run of Midsummer at Tech was just abysmal. I mean, it was abysmal, you know. it felt like, oh my God, what have we done? You know, we've tried to do too many things. And then, you know, part of the process is like, you know, figuring out what doesn't work and, you know, paring that away and trying to figure out the stuff that does work. And that it is an exciting time.
Or all four of you sit next to each other, lighting, stage design, and all you're like,
Yeah. Well, we sit a little bit apart from each other in the theater so that we don't overhear each other talking and griping all the time. And
maybe that's a good thing. Yeah.
But yes, we're all in the theater. And, you know, talking about, and we always meet after every tech rehearsal too. So, you know, the lighting designer, costume, sets, props, you know, the stage manager, the technical director, and I, we all meet and talk about, okay, what needs to change? What, you know, what are the problems? What are the good things? What are the bad things? And, it's exciting.
So you're making changes all the way up to the end, really?
Yes, actually, I do all the way up until the
end. Way to go.
Yeah. I think I changed the curtain call the day of the preview because I didn't care for the curtain call very much.
Okay.
So the day that we had our first preview, we called everybody and said, you know, we got to change the curtain call. So we did that.
Well, what's your favorite part of directing?
This is going to sound stupid to say, but rehearsal is actually my favorite part. Like being in the room, in the rehearsal room with the actors and working on the play and discovering it, you know, finding that moment that you never knew was going to be funny or that moment that you never knew was going to be very moving. The actors do something that's beautiful and important and, you know, it's like learning the play all over again.
Is it more about the process or the product for you?
For me, it's more about the process.
Okay.
I mean, that's why I do it. Now, of course, I want to make a show that's, you know, artful and that's beautiful. I think that for me, there's a certain sort of way that you go about that. You know, there's certain questions that you ask when you do any piece of art or when you do any kind of play. And I try and ask those same questions all the time. And I try not to worry too much about the product. Now, of course, we want to sell tickets. And,
right.
You know, that's always the hard part. But what I really try and do is, you know, what is the honest choice to make here? What's the hard question that we want to ask about what this moment means or what this scene is about? And let's try and go for that. And if we miss it, we have a few weeks to keep trying. And if we never get it, then we never get it. But we should try for that. You know, we should try for the real thing.
What's your feeling on preview night or opening night? Are you usually sitting on the edge of your seat or like, are you backstage? What's happening to you?
If I'm not at Zaza's having a pint, I'm usually kind of terrified. And that's sort of the juxtaposition when you're an artist is that, you know, you commit yourself to process and to really exploring a play truly and trying to find what the real thing is. And then on opening night, you want everybody to like it so badly. You know, opening night for me is always a little bit jittery and terrifying.
I think it would be for me if I was doing a huge production.
Yeah, well, there's nothing worse, you know. And there's no such thing as a director who always directs a perfect hit every time. I mean, every director I've ever talked to, every director I know has, I remember when I did Lear back in 92. Gosh, that was a bad production, you know. And so there are just those times where, you know, you're sitting in an audience with 400 people and you're watching your play and you know it's not working. and that is one of the worst feelings in the world.
Well, how do you get over things that happen like that, like a bad review?
You know, bad review, I don't really read reviews anymore.
Okay.
I used to. I think I've gotten both the best review that it's possible for a director to get and the worst review that is possible. So I feel like, you know, Katharine Hepburn once was doing an interview and they asked her about reviews and she said, well, you know, darling, I never read reviews because if they're bad, you know, they close the show. And if they're good, well, they're never really quite good enough, are they? And I think that's really true, you know, that a good review is never quite good enough because it doesn't say that you're a creative genius, you know, or a bad review just hurts like heck. So I try not to read them, but you do deal with, you know, criticism all the time. And even our audience is, you know, very smart. And some people like a play and some people don't like a play and they're very willing to tell us. And so, I think you, as an artist, you try and learn from what people say. Hey, I really didn't like that. I like to ask people why, you know, why didn't you like it? Because I learn a lot. You know, 90% of the time they're right about what they don't like. So
Mae West used to go to horrible movies to find out why they were bad.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Bad productions can be inspiring. And sometimes when I've directed a bad production, and I have, the next production I do is, you know, one of my better ones because I'm fresh off an experience where I made, you know, 63 mistakes that, you know, I'm never going to make again. And, you know, I guess it's if you're a painter or a sculptor or a musician, it's the same thing. You know, you write a song that you're not quite satisfied with or you do a painting that you're not quite satisfied with and it just helps you go to the next one and make it better and make it, you know, deeper and more interesting.
Are you ever completely satisfied?
That's a good question. I guess no, not really. I mean, my ego is sometimes completely satisfied, awesome. You know, when people jump up and there's a standing ovation and, you know, most of the people who see the show say, oh my gosh, that show was wonderful. That's very satisfying to my ego. But I think as an artist, you really can't be, you know, there are things that you always see in every production and you think, oh, if I was doing that over again, if I knew what I know now, I would do that a little bit differently. Or next time I do that play, I want to explore it in a different way. I've done very different productions of the same play. This is my second Midsummer Night's Dream, and it's a much darker and more interesting and a little bit more physical than the other dream I did, and very, very different in look and sound. And so, no, I mean, I think if we get satisfied, then it gets easy. And
what's the point?
Yeah, right? Right.
What's the hardest lesson you've learned, or do you have a couple of them?
Oh, my gosh. The hardest one I've learned. You know, I don't know. There are so many. There's so many lessons as a director that I've learned. And I guess one of the things we're talking about is one of them. Not reading reviews was a big deal for me. Mm-hmm. And a friend told me that a long time ago. You shouldn't read reviews because if you believe the good ones, then you have to believe the bad ones.
Yeah, right. It's a double-edged sword.
There are also, you know, productions that I've done where I've just made very, very clear mistakes with, you know, thinking about what the play is about or, you know, the casting of the play. And those are big lessons that you learn. Yeah. You start to recognize patterns in plays or the ways that certain actors work and whether they're going to be better in a certain role or not. And, you know, those things are invaluable to learn along the way.
If you had an unlimited budget and could have any actor you would want, what would you direct and who would you put in it?
I was asked this question recently thought about it. And, you know, a lot of what I'm doing these days is trying to get a lot of physicality out of my actors and, you know, a lot of athleticism. And I'm fascinated by Cirque du Soleil and circus work.
Stuff's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. And I would love, if I had an unlimited budget, I would love to do a Shakespeare production and perhaps something like A Midsummer or A Tempest or something like that, that had that, you know, that level of physical actor in it and a budget to do that kind of stuff at the time. I mean, you know, if you direct a Cirque du Soleil show, I think you do it for a year. You have like a year of rehearsal or something like that, and millions of dollars
and
16 stage managers and insurance and all of that kind of stuff. But you know, that's kind of a fantasy of mine that if I could, I would, you know, try and marry the greatest English texts, Shakespeare, with that sort of level of physicality. That's not even the American theater as we know it. We rehearse here in, you know, 3.5 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
You could never do that kind of work in the kind of time we have. But if I had an unlimited budget and I had all of the time in the world, I think that's what I'd like to work on.
And would you do it in Minneapolis, Chicago, LA?
Well, maybe I'd start right here.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Who knows is ready for that?
Yeah, I think they'd love it.
It'd blow their mind.
We'd love it. But I do think it's where American theater kind of needs to go.
Right.
Eventually, I think we need to start having some longer rehearsal times and, you know, delving deeper into what the human body can do and those kind of things. So,
do you ever fear that the audience is ADD? And do you think that they are more now than they have been in the past, and that's why the physicality helps?
Yeah, I've never seen that. I hear a lot about it, and I hear a lot of talk about, you know, audiences being, you know, oh, they just don't listen anymore, they don't care, they're just short attention spans. I have never noticed that. I mean, certainly in Winona, our audiences listen,
right,
you know, with rapt attention, and really have since they first started coming. Now, granted, we have much bigger audiences than we did when we first started now, but, you know, the audiences here, and most of the audiences in the Midwest that I've seen have been very, very attentive and very smart, you know, very capable of understanding anything that we've done. I do worry sometimes about kids coming up as they're growing up because of, you know, the hours of television they're getting watched now, the video games, incredibly short attention spans that are coming up. But I think when an audience is bored, it's because we're boring them.
It's because we're not. You're not doing your job.
It's because we're not doing our job. It's because we're not giving them something interesting to listen to and to look at. And you know, any human being can be transported by a well-told story, right? You know, nowadays we listen to you know, This American Life. You and I, you know, as radio geeks, probably listen to This American Life or you know, Radiolab. You know, we'll sit there for an hour and just listen to this great story that's being told. And so, if we're bored, then usually we're bored because we're distracted or because what's being done isn't very interesting. And I think that's true. If an audience comes to sit in the theater, then our job is to entertain and engage them for the amount of time that we've asked them to give us their attention.
My fiance and I were talking about this, and we said, what if somebody did Romeo and Juliet, but a Jersey Shore version of it? It's just a bad idea.
I think that Shakespeare works in almost any way.
Any situation.
It really does. And that's kind of what's great about it. He's very flexible and malleable. I don't know that he is, but his plays certainly are. And they stand up to a lot of tinkering, do you know? People have done crazy productions. People have put productions of Shakespeare on the moon or out in space or, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, versions of Comedy of Errors or whatever. And most of them work in some way or another. Most of them are going to be interesting just because Shakespeare's kind of, I'm almost going to say universality. It's a word I kind of hate, but you know, he does write about the human being in a way that no writer since really has. And you know, no matter where you put him, even if it's on the Jersey Shore, you're going to listen to what's going on.
Because
to people in Jersey Shore, I'm assuming, fall in love and
you could call it that
and kill each other and you know and are jealous and want money and want fame and go to war and do all the same things that everybody else does. So yeah, I imagine it would work. Now I'm gonna have to watch Jersey Shore. And
okay, so if somebody wants to be like you and doing their dream, and maybe it's directing, what do they need to do?
First of all, you should know it's a terrible business. The pay is very, very bad.
You're so encouraging.
So no, no. But if you have to do it, then you should, you must. You know, I suppose it's like any dream. You know, you can't be afraid of it. You have to know that you want to do it, and you have to just keep doing it. You have to find every opportunity you can to assist people. And a professor of mine actually at Yale once asked me, I was in my third year and leaving the program, and you know, you always get nervous when you're going out of the comfort of graduate school.
Oh yeah, what am I going to do now? Right. Yeah,
and I said, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. She said, well, make a list of people that you'd sweep floors for. And I said, what? And she's like, you know, make a list of the people that you'd sweep floors for, the directors that you'd sweep floors for, and then go offer to sweep floors for them and watch them work. And it was great advice. You know, find the people that you admire and ask them, you know, hey, can I watch you work? Can I help you? Can I go get you coffee? Can I sit in on your rehearsals? Can I talk with you for 15 minutes over coffee about your work and how you do it and how you started, you know, and just not being afraid of doing that and really trying to find your way as an artist. Any artist's life is a difficult one. And to say that's what I want to do is an act of courage and bravery, I think, and to commit to doing it is difficult, and also it's very freeing and wonderful.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time out.
You bet. Great to talk to you.
Same here. Thank you again to director Alec Wilde for taking the time to visit with us on Art Beat. More information on A Midsummer Night's Dream and the Great River Shakespeare Festival can be found at grsf.org.
Art Beat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.